For the families of millions of workers around the world, remittances are literally a lifesaver, but the cost of sending money home remains stubbornly high. So why aren't remittances getting cheaper? Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of interviews with some of the world's leading economists. To find out more about this topic, I recently spoke to Steve Cicchetti of Brandeis University and Kim Schoenholtz of the Stern School at NYU. They are the authors of our VoxEU column, The Stubbornly High Cost of Remittances. So I asked them about how high these costs are, why they are so high, and what, if anything, we should do about it. I began by asking Steve to put some numbers on the scale of remittances around the world.
Remittances account for $600 billion a year, which is about four times development assistance worldwide. They've been going up astronomically. They're three times what they were in 2000 and about five times what they were in 1990.
Kim, I assume remittances flow predominantly from rich to poor countries.
That's right, Tim. About three quarters of the flow goes to lower and middle income countries. And as a proportion of their GDP, that's been rising. On average, it's about 1.6% of GDP today, up from 1.2 in 1990, but that really understates it. There are a few economies, like Haiti and Nepal, where it's more than 30% of GDP, and there are more than 30 countries where it's more than 10% of GDP. A few examples include Guatemala, the Philippines, and Senegal.
Steve, how are these transfers sent?
Well, there are a number of ways that they're sent. They can be sent by banks. People can use post offices. There are money transfer operators. But increasingly, people are using fintech mobile payment systems on their smartphones.
Steve, compared to bank charges in the developed world, they are extremely expensive, aren't they?
Well, the World Bank does a survey quite regularly. And in their most recent surveys, they found that for a $200 payment, so this is not, these are not wealthy people, and they're sending relatively small amounts regularly back to family members, that the cost is about $14 on average around the world. So that's they're paying 7% of this. Now, it's important to keep in mind that there are two parts to these charges. There's not only the fee that the operator states, but there's also the foreign exchange transactions. So they're usually going to be transferring dollars or euros or pounds into the currency of one of these poorer and generally smaller countries, and that is going to involve a fee. That fee is primarily hidden from people. So I think that one of the things is that the World Bank finds that that fee is quite substantial. Now, the other thing is that there's a huge amount of variation in those charges. So for instance, the World Bank will tell you individual corridors, so that's interesting. If you look at the charge of sending, say, $200 from the US to Mexico, that's something that's done with some frequency, the charge there is less than $9. That's relatively cheap relative to the 7% average. But from South Africa to Botswana, the charge, including again those two parts, is over $35. So that's absolutely enormous. Now, the other thing is that Western Union is a big transfer operator here, and they're profiting handsomely from all of this. In 2016, according to their financial statements, they're making over $250 million from providing this service to, I grant, a large number of people around the world. But again, it's a sign of how profitable this business is, and a business that is taking money away from less well-off people.
Kim, is it fair to think of this as a tax on the poor?
I think that's reasonable, Tim. You think of the total cost as running about $30 billion a year. Just to give a comparison, that's on the same order of magnitude as the entire non-military foreign aid budget of the United States. So it's far from trivial. And the way to think about it is that this money, this $30 billion, could have been used to enhance economic growth in the recipient country. And most of these recipient countries have relatively low capital per worker levels, and the transactions costs involved in investment in those countries are substantial. So that extra $30 billion could have promoted extraordinary volume of capital formation and ultimately accelerated productivity growth in these countries.
This is a huge market with many undifferentiated sellers. And in Econ 101, one of the first things we learn is that these costs will be competed away. So, Kim, is this happening?
Well, let's just get the numbers out first. The decline in cost is pretty slow. About a decade ago, it was close to 10%, and now it's down to 7%. So it is declining. But that pace of progress looks sort of slow compared to all the innovation and technological progress that we see in the financial sector, especially domestically. Interestingly, for the money transfer operators, these are the non-banks, the average cost is still stuck above the 7% norm for the entire global transfer or remittance class. It's more like 8%.
Just add to that, I think the really troubling part of this is that, as we said at the beginning, the volume of these transactions has gone up fivefold, and at the same time, the cost hasn't fallen by much. You would have thought that with a large increase in volume and dramatic improvements in technology, that the costs would have come down much more quickly.
In the last decade, we've seen the G8, the G20, and now the Sustainable Development Goals, all advocating lower costs for remittances. So are there practical ways in which we can make this happen?
You're right, Tim. They've been targeting 5%. Obviously, we're still stuck above that, more like 7% or even 8% for the money transfer operators. So there are two conceivable ways to get there. The first one involves education, educating the people who are making the remittances or initiating the remittances. As Steve mentioned earlier, there's a huge variation in cost according to the method or the specific provider in each corridor. And so the World Bank has created this smart estimator that averages the cost of the lowest three cost providers. And that average turns out to be close to 5%. So it's actually not far out of line with the target. So one way to think about this is, if people were aware of those alternatives and shifted their transmission to using these low-cost providers, you'd get pretty close to the target. The second, obviously, is to promote greater competition. And there are two ways to think about this. One is that more than half of all the remittances go to only 10 countries. So those countries can play a role in promoting competition in remittances to their residents. The other thing is obviously technological change. It's worth keeping in mind that at least the mobile money providers actually do show lower costs. Their cost on average is about 4%, well below the 7% norm today and below the 5% target. And so expanding that technology is really important. And there's good news on that front. Mobile money accounts are proliferating in many low-income economies. Just as an example, the World Bank recently published its data on financial inclusion. They estimate there are still 1.7 billion unbanked adults in the world today, but more than 1 billion of them actually have mobile phones. So the technology for lowering costs may already be at hand.
Steve, do you predict that these costs are going to stay stubbornly high?
First of all, I think that the 5% goal of the Sustainable Development Goals is clearly at this point within reach. It does appear as if the combination of competition, technology, and education can bring us to that point. The question is whether or not we're going to go any further. And there, it's very hard to say. And I'd say that there's a real sticking point. And that sticking point is that we are quite concerned about money laundering and terrorist finance, and I think reasonably so. And what that means is that banks, in order to reduce money laundering and terrorist finance, have a lot of regulations, not just regulations, but a lot of processes in place where they have to know something about their customer. So the amount of information that you have to collect about who it is that's at either end of these transactions is a sort of fixed cost, if you will. And it's hard to see that dropping unless we're willing to give up on certain kinds of privacy. So we could imagine, for instance, there's a technology now in India. It's a biometric identification technology called Aadhaar. And every Indian, every person resident in India has to have this. What the government then has is a retinal scan, a facial scan, and fingerprints that are attached to this identity. if we can imagine giving up on privacy to the point where everyone has some sort of identification number, and that identification number is linked to their personal characteristics that then allow a bank or a money transfer operator to quickly check who they are, then we can imagine driving the prices down. But until we get to that point, at both ends of these money transactions, of these remittances, there are usually banks. And both of those banks have to know who their customers are. And so it's not until we drive down the price of know your customer compliance that we're going to be able to drive down the cost of remittances.
Finally, Kim, is there a policy or an innovation that you think could have an immediate impact on this?
We're just at the early stages of thinking about something called RegTech. You know, we've talked about fintech for a long time and as a source of lowering cost. And Steve's highlighted that anti-money laundering, know your customer rules imply regulatory cost. But what we should be trying to encourage is the use of technology to lower those regulatory costs as well. Steve gave an example of the biometric IDs in India that do obviously raise privacy issues. But there may be other mechanisms of RegTech where we could hope that big data will allow us, at least with greater probability of tracking money laundering or terrorist finance when there are large and frequent transactions. So it may not be perfect, but we could do better.
Steve and Kim, thank you very much.
Tim, thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
If you want to find out more about this topic, Steve Cicchetti of Brandeis University and Kim Schoenholtz of the Stern School are the authors of the Vox EU column, The Stubbornly High Cost of Remittances. This has been a Vox Talk, presented by the Centre for Economic Policy Research. For more in the series, visit voxeu.org/vox-talks.